Welcome to KBPS on PRP, a show featuring local news, music, and conversations, produced by students from AM 1450 KBPS, the Portland Public Schools radio station. I'm your host, Joe Anderson. You're listening to KBPS on PRP, with your FM dial tuned to 99.1. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School, staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry, streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial. KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland, on the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland, or streaming online from any computer at prp.fm. KBPS on PRP, a new hour-long show featuring KBPS students on Portland Radio Project.
Hi, this is Jonathan. I just released a new single called Torrent. You can find it on all platforms under the artist's name, Yona Klatchko. I put a lot of time and effort into this track. I didn't really have any direction I wanted to go in from the beginning. All I knew is that I wanted to make another house track. Kind of just went off the top as always, letting the music take me. I'm really proud of this one, and here it is. Enjoy, and thanks for listening. Hi, this is Yonath Dunn. I just released a new single called Torrent. You can find it on all platforms under the artist name Yona Klatchko. Enjoy and thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm Apple Madison, and I'm here to talk about an artist who has done something that has never been done before. This artist put out a new album recently, and every song on that album had a spot on the top 10 at the same time on the Billboard Hot 100. The one and the only Taylor Swift. Not only was she the first to do this, she was the first female to accomplish it. Taylor is just the next woman to make history in music. There are many women who made music history. For example, Whitney Houston. Whitney was the most awarded female artist of all time. Mariah Carey, she has 5 Grammys and a dozen other accolades from her world-breaking career and vocal range, making her one of the wealthiest female artists in the world. Can't forget about the genius Ella Fitzgerald, one of the most popular jazz singers for over half a century, and she still makes us close our eyes and sway whenever we hear Summertime. Miss Taylor debuted her album called Midnights on October 21st. I listened to the album and I loved it. She did a great job conveying the emotion she wanted the listener to feel. My personal favorite would have to be Midnight Rain. It's a very bittersweet song about being in a relationship with a person but being in 2 different points in your life. It really conveyed the right person at the wrong time. At least that's what I got from it. I'll play it for you and we'll see what you get. Here's Midnight Rain by Taylor Swift.
Pain, he wanted a comfortable, I wanted that pain. He wanted a bride, I was making my own name. Chasing that fame, he stayed the same. All of me changed like midnight.
Pageant queens and deep pretenders, but for some it was paradise. My boy was a montage, a slow motion love potion, jumping off things in the ocean. It broke his heart cause he was nice. He was sunshine, I was midnight.
He wanted a comfortable, I wanted that pain. He wanted a bride, I was making my own. Chasing that fame, he stayed the same. All of me changed like midnight.
It came like a postcard. Picture perfect, shiny family, holiday, peppermint candy. But for him, it's every day. So I peered through a window, a deep portal, time travel, all the love we unravel, and the life I gave away. Sunshine, I was midnight pain. He wanted a comfortable, I wanted that pain. He wanted a bride, I was making my own name. Chasing that fame, he stayed the same. All of me changed like midnight.
He wanted a comfortable, I wanted that pain. He wanted a bride, I was making my own name. Chasing that fame, he stayed the same. All of me changed like midnight.
Sometimes we all get just what we wanted, just what we wanted. And he never thinks of me, except when I'm on TV. I guess sometimes we all get some kind of haunted, some kind of haunted. And I never think of him, except on midnights like this. Midnights like this.
Today, I have brought a retired nurse onto this topic because we are talking about the drug problems in Portland. This is my grandma, Marge. Say hi.
Hi, I'm Marge. And like she said, I'm a retired nurse and I worked in community health for 30 years. And so I'm aware of the issues. Go ahead.
All right. My first question is, what are your thoughts on Portland ranking number one in soliciting drugs?
I think that a couple of years ago, I'm not sure if it was just Portland or Oregon on the whole, that decriminalized a lot of the hard drugs. So when someone was picked up for drug-related issues, instead of taking them immediately to jail, they were offered instead drug treatment and trying to help treat drug addiction rather than just have it. As a result, a lot of people decided not to seek treatment. And so they're also able to use their drugs without any real consequences. And so not only do the people in Oregon are able to freely use drugs, but there are also people from neighboring states, I believe, are more likely to come to Oregon so they can also freely use drugs without any consequence of jail time. And so that, I think, has really increased the drug use in Portland and in Oregon. Go ahead.
My next question is, what are your thoughts on people going to the doctors and getting certain kind of medicine and then becoming addicted to it to the point where they keep coming back and trying to get more?
Okay, it's been a serious issue for quite a few years. There are a lot of people with pain, needing pain medication. When you get addicted to pain medications, your body actually can become less susceptible to them, so that in the past, one Vicodin would take care of your pain for, let's say, 8 hours, but with time, you need two Vicodins every 4 hours. And so not only are you getting addicted to it, but it doesn't work as well. And so you have to do more and more to get the pain medication. A lot of people actually go to the emergency room. Some will even inflict themselves with injuries so they can go to the emergency room and get prescriptions for narcotics. Or they'll go there, you know, claiming they're in severe pain, and busy ER doctors in the past would just automatically give them a prescription of 30 Vicodin and say, go back to your doctor. Well, they go back to the doctor, they don't get it there, so they go back to the emergency room with a different emergency room, or they go to a different doctor and they start doing doctor hunting to get narcotics. And what Oregon and Washington have been doing is actually getting the teams of primary doctors, a network of primary doctors, ERs, hospitals, clinics, pharmacists, so that they can actually get a printout. So if you go to the emergency room, the doctors can actually see what narcotics have been prescribed to this patient anywhere in Washington or in Oregon. Pharmacies, they can, when they get a prescription brought to them, they can see this person has gotten prescriptions from 5 different doctors in the last 3 months, you know, and they can start sending this information to their primary doctors, or they can alert it and put alerts there so that they are able to cut back on this. And also, in a lot of clinics, they have patients do pain contracts so that if they do start hunting, doctor hunting and for narcotics or going to the emergency room a lot, they no longer are able to get narcotics from their primary physician for their chronic pain. So they are trying to look at alternative methods for pain, because a lot of people are in pain and it's a big issue. And unfortunately, a lot of the drugs that they have available are addictive and dangerous. Next question.
My next question is, drugs usually lead to homelessness. Do you agree with that, or do you think there's a different cause?
Well, I think that homelessness is a very complex problem here in Oregon, in Portland in particularly. There's a with the astronomical price of apartments and housing, there's a lot of people who are homeless just because they can't afford or can't find an apartment. I had several patients who were U.S. citizens, who elderly, but they, you know, they had like Medicare or something, like, you know, they had some income, and but they just couldn't find a reasonable apartment, you know, and so they ended up sleeping in their cars. So it's not just drug addicts, but when you do go down the line of drug addiction, it's hard to keep and maintain a job. And so if you're unable to maintain a job, it's hard to maintain an apartment or a house. And so a lot of people would then need to live with family or friends. And after a while, when you're don't have any income coming in and you're needing money for drugs, where do you get that money? It's either somebody's giving it to you or you're stealing it if you're not able to work or you're not working. And so there comes a point where a lot of family and friends just, it's like, hey, I can't deal with this anymore. You've stole, you know, too many times, or this is a bad example for my kids or whatever. And so they lose that safety net and end up on the streets. And in Portland, there are a lot of shelters that are going up and different organizations trying to help the homeless. And there's a pretty good sizable amount of people that aren't willing to go into the shelters. They'd rather stay in their cars. They'd rather stay in their tents, wherever, because they go into a shelter, they're not able to use drugs. Because a lot of them do put in a stipulation that, you know, no drug use or no alcohol abuse. And so you do have a lot that aren't accepting the care provided because of their drug addictions. Next question.
So Oregon ranked last statewide to access to treatment of drug addicts. What are your thoughts on that, and how might we improve?
You said that they are last in the in drug. Well, I know that
in 2020. Yes, sorry, I forgot to add that.
That they were the lowest in the drug facilities.
Yes.
For treatment.
Yes.
There are a lot of over the years, working with clients, different clients with drug abuse, there has never been a large amount of facilities or that many facilities in the past for drug addiction. And with the new law saying that, you know, it's jail or instead of sending people to jail, they're offering them drug addiction treatment. There's just no treatments available. There's not the facilities available. I had patients who waited 6 months to get into a inpatient drug addiction facility. And others who waited, you know, months and months, you know, to get into places, and some they just never were able to get into anything. And that's if you've got insurance. If you don't have insurance, forget it. There's just not the facilities for that. And so even before they changed the law, there weren't very many options for people. And I doubt seriously that there's been a lot of change in that, that there have been a lot of actual facilities available and mental health available for people to get not only, you know, the help they need for the drug addiction, but for the mental health issues that comes along with that.
That was really my last question.
So they've got, I think that they need to put their money where they're, you know, they need to actually put money into drug addiction facilities, and they need to, and training for counselors. You know, I don't think that there's enough counselors available or facility, you know, the staff to staff them. They can have a building, but if you don't have qualified staff, you're also up a creek. And so they need to actually hire or train, really start working on training people to be able to do that kind of counseling and treatment. What was your next question?
This will be my last question. And it is actually related to what you were saying earlier. Does mental health usually for people who have it end up with drugs, or do people usually go to drugs to help them with their mental state?
Okay, I'm not really qualified to be able to. I mean, that's a really tough one that for anyone to really answer. I think that there are a lot of people with different mental health issues that use drugs to escape. When you have anxiety, depression, some people will use drugs as to thinking that it's going to decrease their anxiety or decrease their depression. They think that drugs is something that helps them to be more socially active or accepted. Some people with mental health issues end up on the street also because they don't have the counseling, the help that they need. They become, some of them, alienated from their family and friends, and so they're out on the street. And when you're on the street, drugs are available. There are people who will try to, you know, get preschoolers into drugs. I mean, the dealers and so forth, they don't care who they're going to snare into their webs. And so mental health, someone on the streets with mental health issues are prime target. And so it makes it easier for them to also become drug addicts just because they're on the street and it's there and it's part of that culture. But it's a very difficult situation. Just mental health on the street is a totally different complex issue.
Understandable. Those are all my questions I have. Thank you for joining me on air for this project. Thank you again.
Due to the harsh weather we have been having in Portland, many incidents have happened where the rain got a little too harsh. On November 4th at roughly around 9 p.m., an electric fire substation in Mount Tabor neighborhood prompted street closures and power outages for thousands of residents Friday night. According to Portland Fire and Rescue, the rain that night was especially rough and throughout the day. We interviewed a fellow classmate about the effects it had on this individual that day.
Okay, I'm Fran. I'm here with someone who's been affected by the weather storms.
Hello, I'm Phineas O'Hearn.
And can you just tell us what happened?
A tree fell that had been living in my yard for about, well, at least as long as I'd lived there. And it cut the power and destroyed my mother's car.
And how has that affected your family?
We will have to pay $1,500 and insurance will cover the rest, and we'll have to fix our fence.
Have any of your other neighbors been affected by the storm?
Other than losing power, no.
Okay. And what neighborhood do you live in?
I live in Selwood.
Okay, thank you.
From KBPS on Portland Radio Project, I'm Matthew.
And I'm Fran, signing off.
You're listening to KBPS on Portland Radio Project.
Hi, I'm Ariana, and I'm here with...
Alberto, a.k.a. Plata.
So tell me a little of what your role here in Escalera is.
Oof, that's a trick question. There's a lot. We do wraparound services. I'm a youth advocate. I'm a social worker. I'm a mental health therapist for students. I'm also a counselor. And I'm also a support system for students who are going through a difficult time, either at home or during school.
How does Escalera make a positive difference for students?
We try to hold a safe space for students to where they can come in during the school day and after school. We understand what's going on at home and we don't ask questions. We come from the same background, most of us do, and that already puts in, for me, I believe it puts us ahead with students, that building that connection right away with them.
How does Escalera help students?
Academically, we're here during the school day, so students can, if they don't feel comfortable in their classrooms, they need a quiet place to work, they can come down to our classroom. We advocate with their teachers, so if they're falling behind, they don't turn in an assignment, we can email teachers, connect with teachers to see what assignment that is, and if they can extend the deadline. We also advocate with them with their counselors. If their schedule isn't working, they want to drop a class, they want to switch a class, we can also support with that. We're also good at calling their parents. We can call home in Spanish, so we can clearly speak with the parents. And students don't like it, but I feel like it's a good way to hold the student accountable. So being able to talk to their parents one-on-one, over the phone at least, and talk about what's going on in school.
Do you enjoy working with students?
At first, I thought it wasn't. I thought it was going to be difficult, but I've been here for 4 years now with Benson doing the Escalera program, and every year I've enjoyed.
Would you recommend joining Escalera?
Definitely. Even if you're not Latino or Latinx, you should join Escalera. Unfortunately, though, we do have a cap, 34 students, and that's it.
Why does Escalera matter?
It matters because we need representation in the schools. There's not a lot of bicultural or like staff of color, teachers of colors in the schools. So definitely representing our students matter. So I feel like Escalera is important for that reason. We're here to support our students. And again, you don't have to be Latino or Latinx to be in the program. But if you are, most likely or not, the instructor will be from the same background as you.
Anything else you would like to say about Escalera?
We always have free food, snacks, waters. We hold events, so you should definitely join Escalera if you get the chance. And if not, you should come down our space. We're in room A43 down in the cafeteria here at the Marshall campus. The new Benson, we still don't know where we're going to be, but I'm hoping we get a good space for students to keep feeling safe and comfortable in the school.
Okay, thank you.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Now through December 31st, PRP is part of Willamette Week Give Guide fundraising campaign, where donors can support their favorite nonprofits and get some awesome incentives in return. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
We're here with a very special guest who's in studio with us. His name is Shay, and he is a Portland Public School graduate of class of 2021 last year. And you're here at Benson today working with one of our science teachers, Mr. Heigelke, on this really cool project. And Mr. Heigelke put an announcement in the bulletin that I read out to the students every morning, and I was immediately fascinated by what I read in the bulletin. And the little announcement in the bulletin says that, Shay, you are using drones to help save endangered rhinos in Africa.
That is exactly right, yeah.
Wow. First of all, that's mind-blowing. It's super cool. Great use of the technology. Tell us how this came about. How did you come up with this idea, and how does it work?
Well, it wasn't just me. This idea was kind of started by a family friend, National Geographic photographer. She had the idea about a year ago to maybe incorporate drones into conservancy, but we had no idea where to start. After thinking about it a lot more seriously, over the year, we kind of came up with a plan and made it happen.
One of my other students, one of our current radio students, James, is here. James, do you have a question for Shay you want to ask?
Yeah. So when do you think they might be having more uses for drones in the future?
Well, there's a lot of drone usages that are, you know, kind of just extending to every industry every year. So just in the past few months, I've heard about people using drones for organ transplants from hospital to hospital. I've heard about, obviously, the Amazon delivery packages are going to be coming into effect soon. There's just countless uses of drones, and that's why they're so valuable today.
Cool. I'm sorry, James. So real quick, Shay, can you explain how these drones are helping rhinos in Africa? How does that work?
Yeah, so basically at the conservancy that we were focusing on, they have to count the rhinos every 4 days. They have to do a total head count. There's about 150 rhinos that they have to count. So traditionally that's done on foot, but that is a very difficult task to achieve on foot because it's a 140 square mile area to cover. So with the drones, we're going to be able to just do it from an aerial perspective, and it's just going to speed up everything.
Also, could you maybe give anyone any tips in case they ever want to get into the droning hobby?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So if you're a drone hobbyist, then you're already halfway there. Half the way to being a drone pilot is just loving the sport of flying drones. After that, you might want to think about getting your license, your commercial drone license from the FAA. And then after that, you could start working for a company, or you could even make your own company.
Shay, I know our time is limited. I've got a class waiting for me to jump in and teach, and you've got a job interview you're getting ready to run over to. Is there a website that you can share with us where maybe one of our listeners is going, wow, this is really cool that you're using this drone technology to save endangered species around the world? Is there a website that folks can go to check out more information?
Yeah, I will have some information on my website shortly. My website is StevensMediaLLC.com, and that's Stevens with a PH.
So S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S Media.
Stevens Media LLC, yep, .com.
LLC.com. Shay, thank you so much for coming in. James, was there any last final question you wanted to ask Shay?
Not really. This is basically it. But is there anything else that you might think the viewers might want to know?
Well, I want the viewers to know that they're going to be seeing a lot more drones in the future, and to not be scared of them, just know that something good is probably happening.
Also, do not shoot at drones. People
exactly.
Have shot at drones before, so don't.
I want to say, you know, as someone that would love to save rhinos, I don't know if I want to get too close to one. So I think this is a great idea. Keep up the great work, and thank you so much for coming by KBPS and sharing it with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Despite what you might think, the only reason why they're dangerous is because of their horrible eyesight. I've heard them being mostly described as basically just giant puppy dogs with thick skin and really bad eyesight.
And one gigantic horn.
Listeners, and thank you for listening to the KBPS Hour. My name is Zip, and I'll be continuing my weekly segment where I review a song from a local artist album that was released recently. This week, I will be doing the song Stark Street Shakedown in the album Growth Patterns by the local PDX band Freedom. Growth Patterns was released on July 1st of 2022 with Asher Falero on the keyboard, Brett McConnell on bass, and Matt Butler playing the drums. There are no lyrics in the song, but it includes lots of instruments that tell a story of their own. Let's take a listen. I think this music is perfect for a music festival because it has no lyrics. It's perfect as background music and helps you relax. The waviness on the keyboard is very soothing, combined with the bass, makes you want to nod your head and tap your foot. The fluctuation the song goes through makes the song not get boring, and allows yourself to groove with the changes. That's all for now. My name is Zip, and I'll be back on next week's KBPS Hour. Hey, this is Oscar Krimen and Redding, and today we're with Malcolm, one of the KBPS junior students. We're doing an interview on college football. Redding, take it away.
All right, so Malcolm, first things first, are you a Duck or a Beaver fan?
I'm a Beavers fan for sure.
What makes you a Beavers fan?
My mom went to OSU, so that's making me a little bit of a Beavers fan. I've been a Beaver fan since I was about 5, and she graduated from there.
All right, nice. So I'm going to go the opposite direction here for a second with the Ducks. The Ducks won last week against Colorado, which doesn't mean much, but it kind of does because if they lost to a 1-7 team, we know how that would have ended up. But luckily for them, a lot of big teams lost ahead of them, including Alabama was 6, Clemson 5, Tennessee 1. So Oregon's now moved from 8 to 6 in the rankings, and they need to be in the top 4 to make the playoffs, of course. Do you think they could have a chance at maybe making the national championship, even making the top 4 playoff position?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a chance there with a lot of teams with a one loss to their schedule. I think it really matters if TCU loses or not. TCU's right there. I mean, I think Georgia, Ohio State are a lock right now, but Tennessee, I mean, they lost a game. I mean, Michigan and Ohio State play, that's another loss. So it really just depends on how the teams in front of them really shape up in the end of their schedule with the SEC. I definitely think they have a chance right now, especially after last weekend.
Yeah, so you look... Yeah, like you look into the earlier part of the season, TCU hasn't really played anybody specifically great ranked.
Definitely not.
But then you look at Oregon, they've already gone up against Georgia first game, of course. So, of course, there's going to be bumps in that first game against Georgia. Yeah. But also, you think they could make that leap and maybe beat Georgia? Or I don't know.
Oh, I don't think so after that week one loss. They lost about by 40 points plus.
I think it was, 59-3
or
something.
And I think that's literally the only reason why they are not ranked right now in the top four, because they showed that they couldn't compete versus one of the top teams in the country, which is like Georgia is a great powerhouse. But I think that 40-point loss, people are just going to be like, man, other teams like Tennessee only barely lost to Georgia. They're going to definitely get in over Oregon with that big, massive loss.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to do it for the Oregon side of things. We'll have Oscar take over the Beavers side of things here.
Hey, so the Beavers and Ducks game, it hasn't come up yet, but when it eventually does come to fruition, which team do you think has a better chance of winning? Like you said earlier, the Beavers are your favorite, but... do you think the Beavers have a good chance at winning against the Ducks?
Man, I wish, but I was watching last game last weekend, and I just don't think so. The defense is phenomenal. I think that could definitely stand up to the Ducks. I mean, they already almost beat USC and Washington just with their defense, but their offense is absolutely atrocious. If they had a better offense, especially at quarterback, they definitely could. I mean, I just think that their offense just isn't there yet. I mean, I hate to say it, but the Ducks could lose. I mean, they've had a lot of times where they've almost made the college football playoff, and they lose to Oregon State or Stanford. So, unbiasedly, I'm going to say the Ducks are going to probably win, sadly. But the Beavers next year, I mean, if they get a good recruit at quarterback, they can for sure win.
Thank you for your time, Malcolm.
Yeah, no problem.
We don't have any final words, but everyone, thank you for listening. This is Oscar in Redding. See you later.
Hey, this is Kayvon from KBPS and Portland Radio Project. Today we're here to talk about Measure 112. This ballot amends Constitution, removes language allowing slavery and involuntary servitude as punishment for crime. The good news is this measure did pass. The bad news is how many people voted no. It turns out 44% of people voted no on this measure, including counties from Marion and Jackson, the no side winning measures a majority of votes. Hey, I'm here with Aviana. Aviana, what do you think about Measure 112 and how many people voted no on it?
I think it's pretty crazy the amount of people that would say no to that. Like, mm-hmm. why would you want there still to be slaves this mm-hmm. day, these days?
Yeah, that's pretty weird, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's pretty weird that you can use mm-hmm. do that as mm-hmm. a punishment mm-hmm. for a crime. Mm-hmm.
I went around and interviewed various KBPS students about what they're going to be doing this Thanksgiving break. Here are their responses.
Regardless of the condition I'm at, on the 22nd, I go to Hawaii on good terms.
I'm going to my grandma and grandpa's house.
Take some senior pictures, you know, dress some nice.
I'm just going to be hanging around the house, hanging with family. Luckily, all my family lives here, so have a good Thanksgiving.
Probably just sit at home, you know, eat some food and watch football.
I'm gonna go to Granny's house and eat some food.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna eat some mac and cheese and some greens. Yummy food.
I'm gonna eat good, go to a couple parties, you know, teen stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna eat good. That's really it. Just chill, watch the TV.
Just working, just hanging out with my family.
Hello, my name is James, and you're listening to the AM 1450 KBPS Portland Radio Project 1 Hour Show. So I'm here interviewing Meriwether Stewart about the Nordic Northwest Lucia Court and the scholarship program. So, Meriwether, what is Lucia Day about?
Lucia Day is a celebration in the Nordic countries on the 13th of December, celebrating the story of Saint Lucia. She wears a wreath on her head that has candles out of it, and wears a long white gown and a red ribbon that ties it.
So, what is the Nordic Northwest exactly?
Nordic Northwest, at the Nordia House in Portland, they are an organization that seeks to bring the joys and the traditions of the Nordic community back to those who maybe missed out on it, those who have maybe Nordic ancestry in their family and want to learn more about their roots can go to the Nordia House and learn more about them. They have all sorts of amazing programs. You don't even need to have Nordic heritage to enjoy it. Anybody can find something fun in the Nordia House.
So, what is the Lucia Court and what is the Lucia Court Scholarship Program?
The Lucia Court Scholarship Program is a program for young girls ages 16 to 20 who want to be the light in their community during the winter months, especially leading up to Christmas. What you do is you go to, like, orientation, you have to give a little speech, and you go to all of these fun events and you help assist with a bunch of amazing Nordic events like Scan Fair, which is happening on December 11th this year, and you get a scholarship ranging from $1,000 to $2,500 for college, so you can pursue higher education.
So what exactly does the Lucia Court do?
As I said, we help around with a bunch of Scandinavian events. As I said, there's Scan Fair coming up. There's also, we go to a couple of church services and we assist with those. They're Scandinavian church services, which is very fun. We're going to, sometimes we even help with non-Nordic traditions. such as we're on the 20th, we help decorate a. You're gonna have to cut that part out. No, you don't redo it. We can just cut that part out. We do a lot of amazing and fun volunteer work as well, and we even have a couple of events that aren't during the holiday season. There's Midsummer, which we dance around the Midsummer pole, and there's the Starlight Parade, which we have a Viking ship float. It's pretty cool.
So why do you think you should be chosen as the Lucia?
Because I have been in touch with my Nordic heritage since I was 2 years old and started dancing with my little Swedish dancing buddies. I always loved going to the meeting, to the practices, and dancing my heart out and having all these fun things that I got to tell all my friends I did.
So, are there any final thoughts you have on this?
Go to the Nord. You should visit the Nordia House. It's hard to describe. It's just such a cool experience to go to, like, events at the Nordia House. Also, Scanfare, as I said already, December 11th at, I believe, the Convention Center. I might have to double check that. But there is a bunch of events which I believe many people that are listening would love to see. So you can go to the Nordic Northwest website to learn more.
Well, that was a great interview from Meriwether Stewart of AM 1450 KBPS. This is your host, James, signing off.
Hello, this is Dame DB of Makai's Creation Corner, and today we will be talking about, drumroll please, fan fiction. As you've noticed, something different about this episode. Our normal host, Makai, is...
Dawn, dead, I'm a ghost haunting Dane. Hello.
Yeah, so I will be the co-host of this episode. My name is Dane, and I'm normally the editor, and now I'm on the front side of the microphone.
Splendid.
All right, let's get started. So, Dane, firstly, how would you define fanfiction?
I would define fanfiction as media that is based on other media, as in, like, you take the characters or world or both, and then write a new story.
And how do you feel about fanfiction, emotionally, and all of that jazz? Didn't need to specify that, but here I did. Anyway.
So, I would say that fanfiction is useful when you're learning how to write, because you don't have to go through the creative process of making characters in a world. However, I don't like the communities that stem from it, and what most stories tell. I think people make fanfiction too big of a thing. Like, people will write a new story, and they'll be like, this is so much better than the original, and then I just don't really like the communities around it.
I personally believe that fanfiction's really helpful in almost every instance. In relation to, like, the communities thing, yeah, some of them are bad. That's how every single group of anything works. And overall, I think fanfiction, it opens up a space where people who don't get a lot of media, like, representation and a lot of spaces where they can tell accurate stories to themselves get to make those new stories. But I do agree with you on how fanfiction is really useful for new writers, as it creates, like, it's like training wheels. You have some support, you have an already kind of made thing that you can kind of mold to your own liking. I think that's something that I can agree on with you.
I disagree. I think that if you want to represent yourself in media, you should write new media instead of taking existing media and changing it. Because if you write a story about you or people like you, then you can make a better story than taking a story that wasn't meant for that and then changing things about it to try and fit it into that narrative. What was your other point?
I actually have an opinion against yours. I think that, who would have thunk it, the queer gay man likes fanfiction. Anyway, I think that fanfiction, because a lot of it is based in communities that can't make successful media, and if they... Let's use queerness, because that's where I'm coming from. Because of the way the general media zones, like film or writing stuff, works, even if a person were to write a story that was similar to how it would be written in fanfiction, it probably wouldn't be that successful, even if it was very good. Let's use the example of good omens.
Are you saying that fanfictions are extremely successful?
No, I'm saying that fanfiction give a place for people to write stories where they wouldn't be able to write, and even if they were to be able to write, they wouldn't be seen because media hates gay people and minorities.
Thing
and
is, I was saying that if you write a story, then you have a specific ending and characters that are meant to tell a story, and then if you just change the characters, then that doesn't change anything else about it, or if you just change the world, or if you change both, but then you should just write your own story if you're changing all things and not taking anything from the media. So it's just you're trying to tell a different story even though another story is being told, which just overlays and it doesn't go well.
Well, I think that it's working with what people had to. You couldn't write an original story, but it's working with things that we had to. I suppose I can maybe understand what you're saying. It's like just creating an original story because why do you need to make changes to another one? But it's like we couldn't do that. You couldn't do that. It's even if you were to attempt to write a new book, it wouldn't get anywhere. It wouldn't get published. If you were to make a film, maybe some people would like it. Indie films are pretty popular, but it wouldn't go anywhere. And yes, as the media changes, you could make an argument against, like, well, now that it's more open, you should just make original stories. But I still think that fanfiction has value for that fact that it could be a comfort to know that you don't have to create something bare bones up. It's a good stepping off point for people to create things.
So are you saying that if someone, let's say, wrote a really gay book, that it wouldn't do that well?
I mean, yeah.
However, sometimes. If they got an existing work that wasn't gay and then made it gay, that people would like it more instead if they wrote their own gay book?
No, I'm saying that because fanfiction...
Then why not just write your own gay book?
I'm saying that because fanfiction isn't seen as actual media, more people will read it. And it's like, fanfiction kind of makes a safe space for things to happen. It's less intimidating. It's more of like real books. But yeah, thank you very much for listening, all of you, and I hope you have a very splendid rest of your existence. Tune in next time for the rest of me and Dane's chat about fanfiction. Maybe we'll actually get somewhere productive. Maybe I'll have actually written a script. Who knows?
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Now through December 31st, PRP is part of Willamette Week Give Guide fundraising campaign, where donors can support their favorite nonprofits and get some awesome incentives in return. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart. KBPS on PRP, the new student show airing on Portland Radio Project, featuring Benson High School KBPS radio students. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School, staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry, streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial. KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland, on the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joe Anderson, and this has been an hour with KBPS on PRP.